Chapter 8.
The things we do for the Empire, Gideon said, sighing melodramatically. I hear you, Del said. I mean, fighting and dying is one thing, but stowing away in this death trap of a ship? Do you think we'll get hazard pay? If we get out of this alive, I think we could make an excellent case for it. He grinned at Del, who returned it. Despite their slightly feigned complaints about their cramped quarters and steady diet of delicious ration cubes, things had gone well so far. True to his word, Admiral Versio had seen to it that the two brothers were constantly in each other's company. Del had been a little worried initially. He and Gideon did not seem like two people who would naturally gravitate toward each other. In the end, though, the shared adventure aspect bonded them. The plan was simple, but there were many places where things could go wrong. Success hinged on greed, timing, and luck. Fortunately for the moment, the brothers Farron would be able to contact the Admiral should something go awry. If, for example, the wrong group of pirates ended up attacking the ship. A large handful of credits delivered by one of the Empire's many shadowy figures convinced a Deveronian smuggler named Korjak to take on a large force-field-protected container, no questions asked. It was to be delivered to Eriadu, the end of the smuggler's run, where someone would be waiting to receive it in 6 days' time. Someone indeed would be waiting to receive the container, provided the ship, known as the Fast Friend, actually made it to its final destination. Research had concluded that the ship's path would take it into dangerous space where Lhasa Raym, the cruel leader of the Bloodbone Order, was known to strike. It seems funny to say, with luck we'll be captured by pirates, Del had commented as they prepared for the journey.
Better than having to go through the whole ordeal a second time, Gideon had replied,
and Del had to admit he was right. The three of them, Del Farron, Gid Farron, and the droid, spent almost the entire journey in the container, sneaking out during times when the crew slept in order to grab some exercise and visit the restroom. They'd swapped battle stories, tales of their childhood, and reminiscences of girls they'd known all too fleetingly. The Empire was a demanding master, and there was little time for personal relationships.
"We're living on borrowed time, people like us," Del had said one evening.
He had loaded up the droid with games and holovids to while away the time, and they were currently playing a travel version of Dejarik.
"You've borrowed more than I have," Gideon had replied.
"Thanks for the reminder, baby brother."
"Seriously, retirement is just around the corner. You need someone to settle down with."
Del shook his head.
"Nope. Wouldn't be fair."
"You?"
"Nah. I've got my eyes on a command."
He moved a piece. The tiny holographic creature emitted a small squeal of delight as it destroyed Del's.
"Does Aiden know?"
Gideon laughed.
"Yes, she does."
Once again, Gideon had evaded a serious answer. Del noticed that his brother was close-mouthed about his childhood, opening up only when it came to his time at the future Imperial Leader's military preparatory school on Vardos and later at the Academy. Del knew he'd lost his family to a rebel bombing at a young age. It wasn't surprising, then, that Gideon seemed almost hungry to hear stories about Del's family and two older brothers who also served in faraway positions in the Empire. Gideon struck Del as someone who was eager to connect with others, yet pushed them away simultaneously. There was an edge to his humor, a coldness that Del supposed came with the tragedy that had struck him so young.
"And now look at you," Gideon had said. "You've risen higher in the ranks than anyone else in your family."
Del had laughed at that, gesturing to the 3-square-meter compartment lit only by the blue holographic glow the ID-10 emitted. He picked up the ration cube.
"I'm living like the Emperor himself," he had said.
They both laughed,
then suddenly quieted. Even here, even now, one did not joke about the Emperor.
They were halfway through the fourth day and were slowly running out of things to talk about. During a long silence, as they sat in the darkness to conserve their light, Del said,
"I wonder if we are going to have to do all this over again?"
"I desperately hope not. I'd rather face the torture droid than 6 more days in a container with you.
Suddenly a screeching klaxon sounded. Gideon activated his glow rod, and the two looked at each other excitedly. They waited a moment to see if it was a false alarm, but when the ear-splitting sound continued and the ship rocked violently, they had their answer. Del deactivated the force field and they leapt out, grabbing their packs and their blasters. The ID-10 rose behind them, providing light for the two to navigate their way around towering crates of illegal goods. Another barrage of cannon fire caused the old ship to shudder. The pair were knocked to the floor. Just as they clambered to their feet, there was a sudden blaze of orange and yellow flame, and then everything, including Del and Gideon, was being drawn toward the suddenly gaping hole in the hull. The ID-10's metallic arms shot out, its pincers grabbing the two by the collars of their jackets. The other pair of arms fastened themselves firmly to the bulkhead as the smaller containers of ill-gotten gains were sucked out into space. Just as Del was convinced that one highly modified ID-10 droid and 2 hapless humans would be next, the pressure stabilized, and normal gravity returned. The droid released them. Gideon looked at it with surprise and respect. "Strong little guy," he said.
"I reinforced his joints and added a magnet," Del said.
"Good thinking,"
Gideon said as he and Del slumped against the bulkhead and looked toward where the hole had been. Their domicile of the last 4 days had plugged it. Astonished and gleeful, they looked at each other and started to laugh. The smuggling compartment was locked, but that had never been a problem. Over the last 4 days, the droid had opened and locked it for them on request. At this moment, their goal was to stay alive long enough to surrender themselves to the Bloodbone Order, and now that the fighting had begun, they were determined to do what they could to help the pirates take the ship. The 2 Inferno Squad members hurried through corridors drenched in blood-red lighting, pausing to blast any member of the crew unfortunate enough to come across them. The droid, too, went on the offensive, attacking with electroshock prods. They emerged onto the bridge where, despite sparking and sometimes smoking consoles, the smugglers were doing their best to fend off the pirates.
"Looks like the cargo area was hit!"
one of them shouted over the din. The captain shouted a long string of something in Huttese, following it up with,
"Make them pay for the lost cargo!"
The pirate ship fired again. Del and Gideon stayed out of sight, watching and waiting. The droid fastens itself to Del's back.
"Direct hit on the engines!"
The screen on the main console suddenly flickered to life. The figure was only a third of a meter tall, but imposing even at the diminutive height. It was a Pantoran female, with blue skin and a long braid of lighter-hued hair. She wore a black jacket, boots, and snug-fitting pants. She had a blaster in one hand, and what looked like a cutlass in the other.
"I am Lassa Raim, Captain of the Opportunity and head of the Bloodbone Order,"
she said in a clear, strong voice.
"Prepare for either boarding or becoming target practice. Which'll it be?"
The 2 humans looked at each other, grinning. Gideon gave Del a thumbs up. Korjak drooped in defeat, sighing deeply. Raim put a hand to her ear, an exaggerated look of confusion on her tattoo-free, beautiful face.
"What's that? Target practice? Sounds fine."
"No," Korjak retorted. "We surrender. Damn you, blue-skinned devil."
"Devil, am I? Look who's talking. All right, I'll think about it."
The pirate captain smiled, and her image disappeared. It was all over after that. By the time the Opportunity had planted the grappling harpoons and hauled the ship close enough for boarding, Gideon and Del had either eliminated or trussed up the crew of the Fast Friend and were awaiting the pirate's arrival. Lassa Raim liked to call herself a pirate queen, and while it was undoubtedly self-aggrandizing, reports claimed that she was always among the first to board a captured ship, so she could terrorize the crew herself. They heard the clank of the boarding tube connecting. Del glanced over at Gideon.
"Think she'll give us a chance to speak?"
"Don't know," Gideon replied. "I do know if we meet her with blasters blazing, we'll be cut down without a second thought, so let's hope she'll listen. I'd rather be fighting than hoping."
"Me too,"
Gideon said. Ready? Ready. Del placed his hands behind his head. Gideon pressed the controls to unlock the door, then stepped back quickly, imitating Del. The door opened, and the striking black-clad, blue-skinned Pantoran of the hologram, Lhasa Rheim, the pirate queen of the Bloodbone Order, stepped onto the ship. Two of her crew followed her. She was much taller than Del had expected. Almost as tall as they were, and neither Imperial was short. Her braid, as it turned out, was lavender, and her golden eyes looked vibro daggers at both the humans.
"You're mighty obliging," she said. "Usually someone has a death wish along about now."
"We do have a request," Gideon said. She rolled her eyes.
"Fine, I'll kill you quickly," she said, and lifted the blaster.
Another bloodbone pirate emulated his captain and aimed his blaster at Del.
"No, don't! We're partisans!" Del shouted quickly.
Lhasa froze.
"Cover this one," she said,
and the pirate stepped forward, smirking as he retrained his weapon on Gideon. The pirate queen's arm shot out, grabbed Del by the collar, slammed him up against the bulkhead, and pressed the tip of her blaster to his forehead.
"Start talking," she said, "and you'd better hope I like what I hear."
"We're partisans," Del stammered.
"You said that. Go on."
"I'm Del Ferrin, and that's my brother Gid. We were part of the Nebula Cell.
We were at the Telic 4 station when the Singularity bombing happened."
The golden eyes didn't waver.
"I heard about that bombing."
Del wondered how much she knew about the logistics of the situation. In their haste to depart after the event, he almost hadn't taken the time to edit the security recordings. He was profoundly grateful he had.
Our cell had been compromised. Some of us volunteered to do a suicide bomb attack. The rest of us were going to join the Dreamers.
"Why Telic 4?
"We knew what ships were coming in. We knew the habits of some of the Imperial officers. They went to that bar often. We figured we'd kill who we could while causing a distraction. Some of us would die so we could escape, try to make our way to join the Dreamers."
"Box said we could trust you."
Admiral Versio had pointed out that in any recordings of the event, Gideon and the droid would show up. He would be seen talking with known partisans. He would also be seen flinging bombs over his shoulder as he fled out of the bar, but thanks to Del's hacking, there were serendipitous bursts of static that had obscured anything that might give them away. And as there was no one left of the cell to dispute the claim, it stood as compelling support to their story. The question was it going to be compelling enough? Lhasa Rheim frowned, glancing from one to the other. Finally, she said to one of her people,
"Take them. I'll verify this. In the meantime, let's haul some cargo."
Del and Gideon were taken none too gently aboard the Opportunity, where they were put in a small holding cell. They were given water but nothing else, and their packs and the droid were confiscated. Del wasn't worried. He'd made some adjustments that would bury anything related to Inferno Squad unless a certain code was entered. Unless the pirates were exceptional hackers, the information was safe. Going on the assumption that they were being observed and listened to, they spoke little, and when they did, they made sure they said nothing to jeopardize their story. Their time as undercover operatives had well and truly begun. Del just hoped that it would last longer than a few hours. At last, the door was opened. The man who had trained his blaster on Gideon filled the doorway. His weapon was in its holster at his hip.
"Lhasa wants to see you," he said. "Follow me."
Lhasa awaited them in a large, comfortably decorated cabin. There was a bed, a trunk, a table and chairs, and a sideboard with glasses and a bottle of amber liquid. She looked them up and down as they entered, then nodded to her crew member that he could go. The two men stood quietly, waiting.
"Sit," Lhasa said.
They sat. She poured three glasses and set two of them down in front of her captives. Or were they guests now? Raising her own glass, she said,
"To absent friends."
They drank.
It was whiskey, and it burned warm and sweet as it slipped down Del's throat.
"I only met Bach once," the Pantoran said, leaning back in her chair and putting her boots on the table as she rolled the empty glass between her fingers. "I'll bet he was glad to die doing something he believed in. With any luck, we'll all go that way. Making a difference."
Del's eyes slid over to Gideon's, whose face was carefully neutral. Lassa didn't miss the glance, and she emitted a soft, throaty laugh.
"So you're thinking those are strange words coming from the leader of the Bloodbone Order, right? Would it surprise you to learn that I let that horned Sleemo and what crew members you didn't blast go on his way, after lightening his load, of course?"
Another exchanged look, then Gideon nodded slowly.
"We thought you'd kill them all. It's what all the stories about you say."
Lassa reached for the bottle and refilled her glass, waving that they should slide theirs over for the same treatment.
"Don't you know, darling boys," she purred, "that stories are fiction? Oh, I've taken my share of lives, but always to save my own, or those of my crew. I just like to let people think I'm going to skin them alive. It makes capturing ships so much easier and poses much less damage to the cargo."
Del was dumbfounded. Gideon started laughing.
"Well," he said after a moment, "you certainly fooled us. And good Captain Korjak, too."
Del smothered a smile at his last memory of Korjak, hurling insults as Rame's pirates tied him to his command chair. He wondered if the Deveronian had figured out that he could escape. Gideon took another drink of the whiskey.
"This is excellent, by the way."
Lassa cocked a pale lavender brow. "Partisans generally don't know much about fine alcohol." There was no trace of suspicion in the comment, but Del wondered. Gideon nodded.
"My brother and I don't know about vintages or cask whatever, things like that. We just know when something isn't swill."
"Oh, this is definitely not swill. Aged Tevraki whiskey.
Very good stuff, but I break it out on rare occasions. Like saying goodbye to old friends."
Her good humor faded, replaced by wistfulness.
"I knew Saw back in the day. Never knew his sister, Stila. Wish I had. She'd have made a fine member of the Order. She might be still alive today, had she. Well..."
She swirled the amber liquid in the glass.
"Let's just say you partisans sure like to burn through your numbers."
It was a good opening, and Gideon took it.
"Empire likes to do it even more than we do,"
he said darkly. "That's why we fight, and we'll keep fighting with the last breath in our bodies."
"We all fight in our own ways," she said.
Maybe it was the whiskey. Gideon had been right. It was excellent, and it was strong, too. But Del piped up and said, "If you don't like killing, why are you helping us?
Why not help the Rebel Alliance, or stay out of it altogether?"
She nodded.
"Fair question. It's because I'm sentimental."
Her gold eyes glinted with a hint of amusement, and her smile was warm. Del had not been prepared for how attractive she was. Nor had he been prepared to admire her quite so much. She reminded him of Aiden. Strong, take charge, beautiful, smart. He frowned a little. Aiden? Why was he thinking about her?
Oh yes, he thought. It's definitely the whiskey. "I've been around a while. I've seen a lot of things. I know when things are simmering, ready to boil over. When something's going to disappear and never be seen in the galaxy again. The partisans are becoming extinct. You were dying out when Jeddah happened. The Rebel Alliance, they're growing. They don't need me."
She smiled, an almost motherly smile.
"You do."
The answer seemed to surprise Gideon. And by this point, as he drained his glass and held it out for more, all Del felt he could safely do was stay silent. After a moment, Lhasa said, "And so, that is a very long answer to your question, Gid. And the answer to another question as well. Yes, I will see that you get to Geosyn safely." Geosyn, at last, Del thought. They had the name of the Dreamer's base of operations. "I'm heading there with some supplies for the Dreamers, so it won't even take long." Lhasa smiled slyly. "But I bet you knew that." Del grinned sheepishly. Gideon said,
"Bok knew."
"Very good. But as you've got no way of paying for your transportation, I'll have to take it out of you in work. I have a couple of bunks open for you and some clean clothes you can wear. But first," she wrinkled her nose delicately, "you both need a bath."